In a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it!
You know what time it is.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic.
Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James with the rejection!
Holy cow! Oh my God!
I don't believe it! It just continues!
Excellence.
Welcome back to another episode of the Sports Hour. This is Mitchmo.
And this is Daddy. Welcome, guys.
All right, we're not doing that
just
one.
Just kidding, Mitch. Listen, I need to try out some new names.
The best you can come up with was Daddy?
Mitch, I'm not a creative, okay? This is why I need help. Listen.
You've got to come up with something better than Daddy.
Listen, guys. Don't you just love the Sports Hour with Mitch Moe and Daddy? Oh, guys, I need help. Please help me find a name.
No one should be calling you Daddy. No one.
No, nobody does. Nobody does.
Good.
Anywho, guys, welcome to the Sports Hour. We're out here. We've got a ton of, like, news stuff to talk about. What an interesting week for sports, right?
Oh God, yeah. There is a ton to talk about. Ton of football, baseball awards coming out. We got a bunch of that stuff. Also some trade talks coming up. We're getting close to winter meetings here in about a month or so. So we're gonna get into that, and then a blockbuster trade in the NBA. We need to discuss some scoring that we need to discuss. And
yes.
A big thing for sports television is going to be happening in the NBA, and so we need to discuss that as well.
Yeah, we've got a ton of fun content, an interesting week in the NFL as well. I don't know if we'll highlight a few games. We more just want to talk about how weird there were not a lot of close games, and the ones that were close were kind of not as exciting. I don't know. It was a weird slate of NFL games this week.
There was like one game throughout the whole week. I know in the morning games, by the fourth quarter, there was one score game. Everything else was two scores or more. So it was, it was kind of an unexciting week. This slate of games we got this week look much more exciting.
We're
going to have a much better week of football this week. But
and have some very, very competitive games. But yeah, let's just get right into this, Mitch. Shall we go with the news?
Yes, we shall. Let's get into the news! Oh, boy. Let's start in the NFL. Guys, the Le'Veon Bell saga is officially over. We don't have to say his name anymore. It's done. Le'Veon Bell did not report by the 4 p.m. Eastern Time deadline on Tuesday to the Pittsburgh Steelers facility. That means he forfeits all of his 2018 salary, and he will not play for the remainder of the season. This, however, makes him an unrestricted free agent going into next season, which means he will not be a Pittsburgh Steeler next year. So, he gave up a lot of money to do this. As this is something that still doesn't quite make a whole lot of sense to me, why you would do it. What does the landscape for Le'Veon Bell, what does it look like for him moving forward going into free agency now?
Well, I think this is the outcome that most of us didn't see coming, right?
Right.
We knew he was going to hold out for an extent, and we talked about that before the season, but we had projections of when he would return and figured that at the very least that by this week, the 11th week of the season, he would report, you know, play out the rest of the season, albeit maybe on the bench or maybe in a very reduced role, but that he would at least play. And now here we are. He's not going to play. And the Steelers will most likely make the postseason. He will not play in the postseason. It forfeits $14.5 million. I think, one, this is just a surprise that it got to this point. But the thinking is he wants to be healthy, fully healthy, in order to get the max contract that he can get this coming free agency. And an injury could cost him $50 million. I mean, it could be significant, you know, what that could do to the amount of money that he can make. So the thinking, I guess, is sit out, make sure I don't get injured, and next season I'm going to get that huge contract that I want. And I think he will get it. I don't think this is going to affect the market for him. I think he's still going to get this contract and get what he wants out of this. And there you go. I guess it'll probably end up working out in the end for him.
I mean, I guess I kind of understand it. But I heard a point that made sense to me was if he's really looking for the big contract, he did this year to elevate that potential contract that he could get. It has either stayed the same or decreased. And he's really done nothing anyways to keep it the same. I guess the best thing that he did was stay healthy and to keep it right where he's at. So, to me, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense not to play. If you get hurt, you get hurt. But he did nothing to improve his value there. It's either stayed the same or gotten worse. And the only thing that he's done to keep it the same was not play and not get hurt. So, that's where it doesn't make sense to me.
I get what you're saying, but at the same time, going into this season, we're talking about Lev Bell and Todd Gurley as the two best running backs in the league. So he's either, I'd probably pick Gurley personally, but if he's not number one, he's number two. So you're talking about the number two running back in the league.
I mean, is he going to be in the league after this?
I still think he is.
I'd put Saquon above him right now.
I don't know, because you're talking about a rookie running back with 1 year worth of experience. And obviously he has looked fantastic, but rookie running backs tend to look fantastic, especially on terrible teams like the Giants. I mean, he's getting every touch he wants because he's the only weapon besides Odell Beckham that they have. So, I still think he's number two, if not number three. So I think his stock stays the same. And if you're looking at it from his perspective, he says, I've already maxed out. I mean, what could he have done this season that was going to garner him any more money besides, like, collect 2,500 total yards, something ridiculous. If he has another consistent 1,600 yards rushing and 800 yards, or 600-700 yards receiving, like, that wasn't going to increase his salary by that much.
It may have. I mean, it may have. We talked about a couple teams with a lot of cap room that'd be willing to pay up probably more than they should for a solid running back in the prime years of his career. And so maybe putting up 1,600 rushing yards and 800 receiving yards would have been enough to even push that contract offer past what he was originally looking for. If he puts up another consistent year like that at age 26, now you look at his 27, 28, 29 years, and you could have potentially get the same production out of it. And guys, and a lot of teams like the Indianapolis Colts, who lack a strong running game, the San Francisco 49ers, who have had a very banged up running game. Those teams are going to have a bunch of cap room to make an offer to a Le'Veon Bell, and they might be willing to pay a little bit more to make sure that they get that solid running back guy.
Yeah, I just think a lot of the ways that contracts are made is it's all based on who else is getting paid that much money. And in the end, it's Le'Veon Bell against himself. Like, there's no competition as far as, what his contract's going to be. So he's going to determine the market himself. And I don't think any, season this year, unless it was a bad one, was going to change the market for him. I think the market is what it is, and it wasn't going to change unless he did something just out of this world. If he had just another solid season, it's going to stay the same. And I think he's smart by not risking injury, just taking the money that he has already on the table, basically, and just saying, cool, well, next free agency, I'm getting that money. All right, some injury news. This happened during the afternoon game on Sunday. Cooper Kupp was injured. He has a torn ACL and will be out for the season. I think this hurts the Rams a lot. If you look at their receiver core, it's not very deep. I mean, they really have Cooks, Woods, Kupp, and they rely on those three guys. So missing out on one of those guys now going forward and then into the postseason, I think is going to be a pretty big blow for that offense.
Oh, absolutely. This was, in my opinion, their most valuable receiver, just because he takes so much attention away from Woods and Cooks because everyone's so focused on what Cooper Kupp can do. And I when you lose your most valuable receiver, that obviously that's going to hurt. This means that there's going to be more of a timeshare for Josh Reynolds, who is, I guess, technically fourth on that depth chart for the wide receiver core. We're going to see a lot of time out of him. And their tight end, Everett, probably could be getting some more targets here in the future. But, yeah, a huge blow for the Rams. This definitely does not help their chance, especially going into a game this week against a very high-powered Kansas City offense where they're going to have to outscore Kansas City because the inevitable thing is that Kansas City is going to put at least 28 up on you.
Yeah,
and so you have to be able to just outscore them, and that's going to hurt them. So.
Yeah, it's sad. It's sad. You know, and I hope, I mean, I think they'll still be fine as a team. It's just going to take some adjustment and guys, like you said, like Josh Reynolds that are going to have to step up on the outside. So we have another injury to a wide receiver that we talked about. This one's kind of sad after a week of signing, right, Mitch?
Oh, yeah. So soon. Yeah, Dez Bryant signs with the New Orleans Saints. I think we reported that last week. 2 days after he signed, towards the end of a practice, he tore his Achilles tendon, and he is gone. This might be the end of Dez Bryant. He's 30 years old. Achilles is already hard enough to come back from. By the time he's going to be fully healthy and play, he's going to be 31 and approaching 32 by the time he's ready to go and be fully healthy. So this might be the end of Dez Bryant, unfortunately. The Saints then countered this tough news of losing Dez Bryant by signing Brandon Marshall. I don't think that really helps them any. I'm not a big Brandon Marshall believer. He's definitely on the backside of his playing years. So Drew Brees can make a lot of mediocre players look really good. So this might be a rebirth for Brandon Marshall just because Drew Brees is the guy throwing the football. So we'll see how that works out. But yeah, nothing really too exciting about that signing, but notable nonetheless.
No, and I think they just need depth is really what it comes down to. He just need guys to throw to. So they signed Dez for that reason. Obviously, he has the injury. So they signed Brandon Marshall to just be a body out there to get a target. And he's a fairly reliable target. He's not going to be able to do a lot, and I don't think they're going to expect a lot out of him. But, you know, hopefully, you know, another option out there for this Saints offense.
Yeah, I mean, the main wide receivers there are still going to be Michael Thomas and Traquan. Then Cam Meredith occasionally, and then Kamara and Ingram. I mean, that's...
Yeah, for sure.
That's going to still be the core guys that Brees is throwing to. But it does give him a little, I guess, an extra option.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. All right, we've got some sad news. Dallin, cue the sad music.
Oh, yeah, cue it.
You guys, this is the saddest day on the Sports Hour we've ever had. The GOAT! The quarterback that is better than Tom Brady at one thing only, which is throwing interceptions. Nathan Peterman has been released by the Bills.
I am so sad,
Mitch. Where's the meme?
This is devastating.
The meme is gone.
Just devastating to me. He was my favorite player in a weird way. In a very strange way, Nathan Peterman was my favorite player. He's been released. You know what the shitty thing about it is? Is earlier that day, in a press conference, Sean McDermott said they still have a lot of faith in Nathan Peterman, and that same afternoon, they waive him. Just disrespectful.
Wow, that's kind of a dick move.
To the GOAT. So disrespectful to the greatest of all time when it comes to throwing interceptions. I am going to be in contact, though, with Paramount Pictures in hopes of producing a film. The Nathan Peterman story. I want.
I love it.
So maybe we could get him in the movie to make a cameo, or maybe even portray himself. I think he's gonna have a lot of free time on his hands now. He's not playing football.
Yeah, very
true.
All right, we should have him on the podcast.
Yes, we should.
I'm gonna tweet at Nathan Peterman and say, hey, please come on our podcast.
I want him so bad on here.
I just see. See what happens. Yeah, this is sad. The thing is the Bills just released the only bit of relevancy they have this season. Like, that's the only thing that made them somewhat relevant is just how bad their quarterback play was. And now they just released him. So now there's nothing to talk about with the Bills.
No, I mean, we could just kind of slowly watch them fade away into irrelevancy the rest of this year and hope that Josh Allen doesn't bust. That's about what we can hope for right now.
Yeah.
Maybe Josh Allen's the next Jim Kelly and turns that franchise around. Who knows? But
it's not Nathan Peterman,
though. He's no Nate Peterman.
We know that. Okay, we also have another meme news today.
We got some winning. I mean, I would say it's huge news.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny, Mitch. Maybe that's funny.
A huge disappointment, though. I don't know.
Absolutely. Yes, Hugh Jackson, the former coach of the Cleveland Browns, has joined the Bengals as the, quote, special assistant to the head coach. Mitch and I were talking about this last night. What does that mean, Mitch? What is his role going to be on this Bengals team?
I don't know. It's so, like, you're going to go get his coffee. You're going to make sure his schedule is clear. Like, he's getting to places on time. I think that's what's going to... Basically, Hugh Jackson is Marvin's bitch now. He's
Listen, Marvin Lewis is gonna be like, hey, Hugh. Thanks for coming on with the team. We appreciate it. I got some dry cleaning I need to get picked up. Can you go grab that for me, please?
He's got a shirt for him that says the team bitch on the back.
Oh, man. It's also so funny, too, because Hugh came from the Bengals to the Browns. He was, I believe, the offensive coordinator.
Yes.
For the Bengals. Now rejoins his organization, and he goes from offensive coordinator to head coach to special assistant to the head coach. It's amazing. Did not think I'd see him back in the NFL this quick. It's pretty
No.
Pretty
I thought I'd see Todd Haley before I saw Hugh Jackson.
I thought I'd see, like, freaking Jim Harbaugh. Before I saw Hugh Jackson.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
yeah.
It's pretty crazy, but hey, good for Hugh, man. He needs a job.
Oh, absolutely.
Bills ain't paying themselves, you know? yeah, so that's just a little bit of a meme news, as Mitch said, some huge news. That was funny, Mitch. Well, I liked
no
that.
No problem. Thanks.
I liked that.
Thanks,
a lot. Man. Let's transition this to the MLB. Mitch, what do we got to talk about for baseball?
So, let's start with some bigger trade news. This guy is going back to this past regular season around the All-Star break, actually right up against the trade deadline. Bryce Harper was reportedly almost traded to the Astros before the Washington Nationals front office shut it down. Or I guess,
oh, no,
their executives.
The ownership shut it down. Yeah.
Nixed the trade right at the last minute. Why, Dallin? Explain
this
to me.
Great question. And here's the thing. I mean, we talked about, I don't know if it was last week or the week before, but we talked about, you know, Harper turning down the 10-year, $300 million contract for the Nationals, fully becoming a free agent. I don't think the Nationals have a chance of re-signing him. And obviously they felt like they did by not trading him. But when he leaves in free agency, you're going to get nothing for him. No. Whereas you could have got three prospects from the Astros farm system, which is one of the best in baseball, and really gave yourself some solid young players for the future. They must think that they can get him back. They must think, and maybe they know something we don't, Mitch, but it seems to me that there's almost no way that Harper goes
back.
I
say pack the team up and go back to Montreal. That's what I say.
Yeah.
Be the Expos again.
It's so bad they need to move back to
Canada. I want
the
Expos back so bad. And a move like this,
that's a cool
franchise. And I just want the Expos back deep down. But that aside, my own personal interests aside, turning this down doesn't make sense. You weren't going to be in play on front. Obviously, you are fastly approaching a time in your franchise where you need to rebuild. And to turn down what's obviously going to be some very, very highly touted prospects, if you're giving up Bryce Harper,
right?
You have to take that. You have to take that and be willing to part ways. And Harper wasn't going to come back anyway. There was all the signs showing that he wasn't coming back. So it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me why they would shut that trade down and not let it go through. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, well, and I think it just shows the ownership. You could tell obviously the GM, the coach. I don't know if the coach, but the GM and the front office, they're on board with it. It's the ownership that shuts it down. So obviously, I think the GM recognizes, hey, like, this is what we need to do. I don't think he's not very confident they can re-sign him. And the ownership's like, no, we got this. And I that dysfunction there is not a good sign.
Yeah, I don't know if there's any dysfunction or not. Mike Rizzo's a solid GM. He seems like he's fairly on top of his stuff. I mean, he built really good teams in the past there in Washington. That wouldn't seem like him to shut that trade down. I don't know. Maybe there's dysfunction there. I don't want to speculate, though, because I feel like Mike Rizzo handles himself pretty well in that situation in those types of, you know, business moves. So,
well, I just think there's obviously a disconnect between the ownership and the GM, where Rizzo obviously thought that was the move to make, was to trade Harper because they weren't going to be able to get him back, take the young players and move on. But the ownership, for whatever reason, feels like, he's the face of their franchise, and it's hard to trade away the face of your franchise at the age that he is and the talent that he has. I don't know. It'll be great for them to come to Dodger Stadium next year and have to play Bryce Harper when he's a Dodger.
Yeah, when he's a Dodger.
But, you know, what can he do? What can he do? Yes, when he's a Dodger. Speaking of superstars being traded, we saw this last week, Mitch. This was some pretty interesting. I was very shocked by this news.
Yeah, so the Cubs are reportedly open to trading Chris Bryant. Obviously, one of the faces of that team right now. He was part of that youth movement that went through the Theo Epstein's plan to build a World Series winner, and then he built a World Series winner, and now they're open to trading Chris Bryant. And what do you expect in exchange for this caliber of a player that Chris Bryant is?
Well, I think you'd have to get something similar to what the Nationals would have gotten for Bryce Harper, right? I mean, we're talking about a kid who's only played, what, 4 seasons?
Yeah.
He's not been in the majors that long. He won Rookie of the Year, and then the very next year won MVP.
Right.
Obviously won the World Series in 2016. This kid is young. He's in his prime. He's won an MVP already. I mean, he's not at the caliber of a Bryce Harper, but for his age and what he's done already in his young career, I think you have to, like, you got to get a really good return for this. How shocked are you? I was shocked when I saw this. I was like, wait, I double checked the article. I was like, is this real? This is very real. Yeah. Are the Cubs punting? Are they just, like, rebuilding? Their team's not that old. It's still good. I don't understand.
I don't think they're punting because I think they have a lot of good players. They have a lot of good players on that bench that they can't play right now. And so because there is someone just a little bit better in front of them. And so I think I can understand what trading a big piece and maybe rebolster the farm system by trading a good piece or two like that. I don't think it's a punt, though. Because they still have a very talented roster.
Yeah, I mean, you have Rizzo, you have Javi Baez, and you have Chris Bryant. And of all those players you choose to trade Bryant, that's like the one I don't touch, in my opinion. I mean, you've got so many guys on that roster that you could trade. That's what I'm saying. Like, you have so many good players that you could trade that I would trade before I even thought about trading Chris Bryant.
Right, but here's the thing, is if you're trying to bolster up, let's say they're trying to re-bolster their farm system right now, they're getting prospects. Who's the guy on that roster that probably holds the highest value?
Sure, Chris Bryant.
Sure. So if you still have great pieces in place, really, why not pick the best one you got and say, hey, we're willing to trade this guy, and we're going to get the best possible prospect package that we can out of these guys, whoever they're trading them with. And rebolster that way, because you still have the good pieces there.
Yeah, but
I understand.
But you want to win. I mean, why would you trade?
You want to win, but you're not going to get
be good for the next 10 years. Like,
right? You're not going to. You're right. You want to win, but you're not going to get the same return as you will for, you know, trading Anthony Rizzo.
Right.
You're not going to get the same as trading for Javi Baez or trading Contreras.
With Chris Bryant on your team. This just seems really strange to me. I don't know. To me, it's like...
If I were them, I'd trade Chris Bryant and I'd get some young arms because that starting rotation is getting a little
pitching.
Old.
Yeah, and it's old. And maybe that's the thinking behind it. I just don't know, man. I really don't know. It's like in my head, if the Rams traded Todd Gurley and they're like, yeah, he's young, but like we can get a really good return from him and we'll rebuild for the future. It's like,
I think that's totally different.
That doesn't make sense.
No, that's totally different because Todd Gurley has a much bigger impact on the Rams than Chris Bryant does on the Cubs.
Okay.
The thing about this trade is that, yes, they're giving up a really good piece, but in baseball, there are so many other ways that you can replace a big name like that leaving.
But
there's so many different combinations of ways that you can replace those numbers that you're losing, production that you're losing.
Would this be similar to like the Khalil Mack trade? Is this kind of what we're looking at? In terms of trading a player that's great, but maybe not as impactful as you need for you know the young draft picks that the Raiders got?
Sure. I mean, yeah, I would say that. It's similar to that. Like the Khalil Mack had a I'm sure that's probably as close as I could think of something.
Well, that's why I don't like this because I hated that trade. So there you go.
I loved it.
I wonder why you loved it, Mitch. Interesting stuff. So obviously we'll keep an eye on this. Who knows? I mean, like you said, winter meetings coming up here next month. He might be gone by the beginning of next year. So we'll keep an eye on this Cubs situation. But very strange. A quick note, we have a retirement. Joe Mauer, the great catcher from the Minnesota Twins, has retired. Don't know how long he played for, but he played for quite a while. Was a very, very solid player. I look forward to him being in the Hall of Fame. I think he's a Hall of Fame caliber player.
Yeah. I wanted to bring up his numbers because I think that you could have an intriguing Hall of Fame conversation about Joe Mauer. Not only one of the greater defensive players that we saw, but he was one of the great hitters of our lifetime. 2,123 career hits, a .306 lifetime hitter. Did not reach 1,000 RBIs, though. Only hit over 20 home runs once.
No.
And never eclipsed 50 doubles. I mean, it's a weird... And I understand that he played on the Twins. He played on some bad Twins teams.
Yeah.
But he also played on some really good Twins teams, like that 05, 06, 07, through maybe 2010, that run. They were very, very good teams.
Yeah.
I mean, never once, for such a great hitter, never once hit more than 200 hits in a season. In fact, his career high was 191, and he only hit over 190 hits one time.
Yeah,
over 180 twice. So I mean, where do you put him in a Hall of Fame conversation? Because for me, the numbers, the batting average is there.
Right, right. And the 2,000 hits is there.
I mean, 21-23. That's still not that far into the 2000s there.
No, but I think
plenty of guys that miss that have more hits than.
Yeah, but I think you look at his consistency and obviously you said his defense. I think that. You have to account for that as well when you're looking at a guy like that. And the catcher, as a catcher, I mean, offense is not what you typically see from the catching, from a catcher on your team. I mean, you're looking at somebody who's a great defender. And then if they can hit the ball consistently, like, he batted .300 lifetime. So that's a very consistent hitter at any position, let alone the catcher, and then to have the defensive skills that he had, I think that bodes well for him in the conversation.
Okay, yeah. I mean, another thing to mention, too, is he never played a full season. Never had 162 games played, even when he transferred over to first base. He was in the beginning of that era where we had fewer and fewer guys playing 162 games a year. He was probably in that first big crop of players coming through or in the back half of that where they weren't playing 162 games a year anymore. In fact, never played more than 158. So it's just something to think about, I guess, when that conversation comes. Now he's still, 5 or 10 years out of the Hall of Fame talks.
Right.
But Yeah. Good career for Joe Mauer, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the greats of this generation of players. Absolutely. For sure. We had some of the awards for the MLB season were announced this last week. Most specifically, Rookie of the Year, Shohei Ohtani from the Los Angeles Angels. He won it for the AL, and Ronald Acuna Jr. winning it for the NL. Your thoughts?
I agree with both of those. So yeah, I mean, I think the pair of Yankees, Torres and Andujar, I mean, had great seasons, no doubt. But what Ohtani was able to do this season, even with the injuries, both pitching and hitting, I thought was great and deserving of the award. I think this is almost to like a projection, like he's going to be the best player out of this group. And so give him the award because he's kind of looking forward in a way. But I do think he deserved it, and I'm happy with it. And Acuna Jr. Deserved it as well from the NL. I think Soto had a great season, his teammate, but I think this was Acuna's award. So I'm happy with both of them.
Yeah, I think actually, I mean, of those two, I think Ronald Acuna is probably going to be the better player throughout the course of the career. I just have a hard time seeing Ohtani pitching and hitting being sustainable, especially if he wants to be a starting pitcher. I could see him being a relief pitcher and then still be plugged in at like a DH role. I don't see the starting pitching and then on his off days DHing. I don't see that being a sustainable route. It worked all right. He hit 22 bombs this year, but he only pitched like 57 innings or something like that. So, and he had the elbow issues, and that definitely hurt him in the long run. But I think Acuna Jr., this guy's going to be really fun to watch, especially in the near future.
Yeah, you know, I'd agree with you. I think he's going to be the most solid player. And like you said, I mean, we've never seen anyone do what Ohtani wants to do. So until we see it happen, it's going to be hard to believe that it can happen. And we'll just have to find out whether or not he can really be the starting pitcher and then on his off days DH. I don't know if it's sustainable either, so I hesitate there. But I think, yeah, both guys deserving of the awards they got.
Yes, absolutely.
We also had Manager of the Year last night, Tuesday night. They announced those. Bob Melvin, manager for the A's, won that award. And Brian Snitker. Snitker? Snitker.
Snicker.
It's spelled like Snitker. I don't know if it's Snitker, but anyhow. That dude, the manager from the Braves, won Manager of the Year in the NL. Mitch, your thoughts on this? Obviously, you're happy with Bob Melvin winning.
Oh, yeah, of course I am. Old Bobby. Getting it done for the A's. I mean, this team vastly outperformed what they were expected to do. So, Bob Melvin definitely deserving of that. And Brian Snicker, I would have given it to someone else. Not to say that the Braves didn't have a good year and that he didn't do a good job with that team he did, but I would have given it to Craig Counsell in Milwaukee. I think this guy just, he once again, a team that vastly outperformed what they were expected to do, and took the Dodgers, who were a superior team, to 7 games in the NLCS. So, and beat the Cubs to get there. So, I think that's I think I would have given the award in the NL to Craig Counsell rather than Brian Snicker.
Yeah, and I'm on board with you. I think Melvin deserves this award, and the voting for both of them was pretty significant in both of their favors. So the voters were pretty. Not a consensus exactly, but pretty firmly with Snitker and Melvin. I think Melvin deserved it. Obviously, Alex Cora, as a rookie manager, winning the World Series with that dominant of a team is exceptional, but the Red Sox were expected to be good. The A's had the lowest payroll in the MLB and still won 90-plus games. So you gotta give it to Melvin and the job that he did of taking that group and making them into a very good team. But yeah, I think in the NL it should have been Craig Counsell. I don't want to take anything away from the Braves and what they did this year, but I didn't expect them to compete with the Cubs the way they did. I didn't expect them to win the NL Central. I didn't expect them to have the best record in the entire NL. And to, you know, when you watched Craig Counsell, especially in the postseason, the way he managed, relying on the bullpen the way that he did, he took a risk there. And I think it paid off in a lot of ways, and it showed like, hey, there's different ways to run this, you know, postseason. Like, you could just go full bullpen if you really want to, and it maybe will work out.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I thought you know, obviously voting is done before the postseason. So I think had the voting been done after the postseason, this probably would have been Craig Counsell's award. But, you know, I think Snitker is deserving, but I would have given it to Counsell, I think.
So. Absolutely. Yeah. Hey, look at that. We're on board with something today.
Obviously, you know, we have MVP coming up, Cy Young, other awards. As we see that, we will talk about them here in the pod. Should come out, I think, a lot of those this week. So you'll hear them on next week's episode.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, we got one more sport to cover. You ready to get into it?
Oh, I'm so ready to talk about this.
All right, let's get into the NBA. Not as many headlines, but probably the biggest headline that we have to cover here today. Jimmy Butler, who we talked about, formerly of the Minnesota Timberwolves, we had talked about him a couple weeks ago, how he had the awkward scrimmage that they ran at practice, and we talked about how he's not going to be there when the season starts. Well, he was there when the season started, and now his run in Minnesota is over. He was traded to the Sixers in exchange for Robert Covington, Dario Saric, and a second-round pick. Obviously a huge blockbuster move for Jimmy Butler, for the Sixers. So we know this makes the Timberwolves worse, I think. I mean, the Sarge is a good player. Covington's decent. But this makes the Sixers, I think, much better. Where does this put them as far as, you know, where they stack up in the East?
I think we have to wait to make that determination. At least I will, because yes, on paper it works out. But on paper, adding Jimmy Butler to Minnesota in the beginning with Karl-Anthony Towns and Wiggins was a really good thing. And in execution was not as good as we thought it would be. And a lot of that was personality. And we have a young Sixers team, Joel Embiid, a very strong personality. Simmons and Markel Fultz, not so much. And Fultz has struggled this season. Does this push him out of their future plans? I mean, do they plan on these four, or has Butler kind of come in to say, all right, I'm the guy in this big three with Simmons and Embiid, and Markel Fultz, the number one pick from last year, is now expendable? I mean, I think there's a lot of adjustment that's going to be made. How well are Embiid and Butler going to get along? How well is Butler and Simmons going to get along? I've heard reports that Simmons and Embiid don't really get along super well. I mean, they're not, like, they don't hate each other, but they, you know, personalities don't jive that much. I feel like Butler is very similar to Embiid. So I think there's a lot of question marks with this. Obviously, the talent on paper, this puts them up there with Toronto and Boston for sure. I mean, I thought they were pretty much there already, but for sure, you know, you look at the talent wise, I think those three teams most dominant in the East. But I have a lot of question marks as far as chemistry and personalities, because he struggled with that in Minnesota, and he struggled with that in Chicago. And Butler is a hard guy to get along with. And is this going to work in Philly? Who knows? We don't know. I guess we'll find out this season.
Yeah, I mean, the big point for me that you brought up is the balancing of the personalities. Increasingly over the last few years, and probably more so now than in any sport in professional sports right now, is the balancing of personalities in basketball, and how important that is to make five guys play well on the court together. And I agree with you that there might be a little bit clashing. There might be a little bit of conflict maybe in the beginning, but I think they got a good coach at the helm right now. And I think that he does a good job with managing those personalities. And so maybe, you know, he can integrate one more personality into that mix and have that team be as successful as they can be, that, you know, reach their potential. That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and then that's, you know, I think that's just a reflection of the era of the NBA that we're in, the super team era of these all-stars, superstar players coming together to create these super teams. As a result of that, and this is something, like you said, we haven't seen, is now you have to balance the personalities. I mean, we just saw a few days ago the fight between Kevin Durant and Draymond Green, over a dispute over the, you know, taking the final shot in a game. And when you have superstars at that level, you have strong personalities and you have to balance that out. And I think we've seen this experiment work in some ways, like the big three in Miami, like the Warriors have done. But we've seen it not work at times, like with OKC and when you added Melo last year, and Minnesota with Jimmy Butler. And so I'm still hesitant to see how this is going to work out, just because it's either going to work out great, or in a year from now, Jimmy Butler will be on a different team. So,
right.
You know, we will find out. But on paper, talent-wise, this is a great team, a very, very great team right now. And they could definitely make a push to be the Eastern Conference representative in the finals this year.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Speaking of All-Stars, just a little bit of news. The NBA has announced that they will be televising the All-Star Draft. For those of you who don't know, starting last season, the NBA decided to elect captains. So the highest vote getter in each conference becomes a captain. And of all the All-Stars, they get to choose who they want on their team. So conferences don't matter. You don't have to have All West versus All East. Anybody can play for anybody, and it's a draft. And fans wanted it televised last year. The NBA hesitated because the players didn't want to be embarrassed by who was the last pick in the draft, but they are deciding to televise it now, and I am so excited for this, Mitch. This is going to be so much fun to watch them pick each other, because they're, you know, most of these guys are like friends. They've played together for a long time. They've known each other. I'm actually really excited to see how this all is going to like work out and how this is going to go.
Oh, absolutely. I'm actually really excited that this will be very fun and so entertaining. I mean, and basketball, especially over the last, it's one of the faster growing sports in America right now. And as far as publicity and popularity, and it's going to be extremely fun to watch. Maybe see a little bit of biases between the captains. You know, biases towards players. I would have loved to have seen Kevin Durant be a team captain right after he left OKC.
And
watch his biases there. Or
does he pick Westbrook, or does he pick Curry? I mean, like, stuff like that is funny, you know?
Right, or LeBron as a captain, and see how he constructs his own team.
Yeah. Well, last year we had Curry and LeBron were the captains, and the first pick was Durant, and LeBron picked Durant, which I thought was funny. You know, he's a guy he competed against, and now he's on this rival team, and he picked him as his number one pick, you know? And it's, I don't know, it's a great idea in general, but to televise it, I think it's going to make it fun to watch for the fans.
Absolutely.
So we'll look forward to that in, I believe, February, something like that. That's when we'll
something
find
like
out.
That. It's after Christmas.
Yeah. We know after Christmas. Yeah, next year. We'll just say next year. Then we won't be wrong.
Yeah, it's in 2019 right. For sure. Coming up.
Yeah.
Mark your calendars.
There you go.
Guys, we had a big scoring thing come up here. Jimmer Fredette, a BYU legend.
BYU legend.
Jimmer Fredette, probably one of my favorite college basketball players of all time. One, the name. Love the name.
It's a great name.
Two, because I was a spot-up shooter when I played basketball. I love Jimmer Fredette because he's a spot-up shooter. He is a dead eye, red hot from beyond the range. He's playing in China right now. He originally played for the Sacramento Kings. His NBA career didn't quite work out early on. That's not to say that he can't come back to the NBA and play, but he's playing in China right now. He scored 75 points in one game.
Yes.
60 of them in the second half. And so just a little bit of reaction from you, Dallin, about this performance from Jimmer.
This is great. Jimmer has been dominating in China for the last few years. Last year, he was the MVP, was just ridiculous at scoring. And obviously, China is not the level of talent that the NBA has. But, I mean, if you can score 75 points in any game, Mitch, if I go in the gym tomorrow at a pickup game and score 75 points, I better get some looks from the G League or something, right? I mean, like that.
Right.
I mean, to be that dominant at any level is significant. And, you know, a lot of BYU fans, I follow a lot on Twitter now that I, you know, produce the BYU Sports Show. And for the last few years, people have advocating for NBA teams to take a look at Jimmer again. And I think this is just another example is why he should get a look. Because if you can score 75 points against professional basketball players, then you at least deserve a chance in a training camp for an NBA team.
Absolutely. I mean, he has the talent. He has the talent. He hasn't gotten the looks. And so I think he definitely deserves a look. He may be a deep rotation guy when he comes back in the league, but he definitely deserves the look. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, could you imagine as a contender being able to bring a guy like this off the bench in the playoffs? You know, a guy that could get hot, could score a lot of points real quick for you. I mean, he's probably not going to be a starting NBA player, but I think a valuable bench piece, sure. You know? I don't see why not. But anyway, yeah, Jimmer Fredette, 75 points in China. That's that was fun. That was a fun thing to see.
All right. So I got an idea here, okay. Dallin. I got an idea here. I want to make this a segment for you.
Oh, yes. I get a segment.
I have a segment that I do. Of course, if you guys are regular listeners, you know that about every other week or so, I do a Mitch Moe's top five list of the week. And Dallin doesn't have a segment. Let's give Dallin a segment here. I want you, Dallin, to give us Daddy's.
I got a name. I just want to call it Daddy's Favorites.
Daddy's top three favorites of the
Daddy's
week.
Daddy's favorites, you know, because every parent has favorites. These are Daddy's favorites.
These are Daddy's favorites.
Oh, Mitch, I love this.
Daddy D's. Daddy D.
Daddy D.
Oh, my gosh. Daddy D.
Daddy D's favorites here.
Guys. Daddy D's favorites. Dallin, tell us about your favorites of the last week.
Yeah, just some notable performances. Seventh, last Wednesday, Hassan Whiteside with almost a triple-double. 29 points, 20 rebounds, and 9 blocks versus the Spurs, which is pretty cool. I mean, he barely missed out on the triple-double, but to get a triple-double in points, rebounds, and blocks is pretty sick. And the fact that he had 29, 20, and 9 is huge. He's been an inconsistent player for, I think, a lot of his young career, but there's a lot of potential there for him, especially defensively. To see performance like this, if you're a Heat fan, is definitely encouraging, and you hope that he can be more consistent as a young player. So that was pretty cool. I saw that. And I was like, okay, Hassan Whiteside, you do you. You're one of Daddy's favorites. Sorry, I'm not... Okay, I'm going to laugh every time I say that. Karl Anthony Towns, another young big man, did have a triple-double. This time, not as good. 25 points, 21 rebounds, 10 turnovers. Technically, that's not a triple-double. It technically doesn't count in the records books, but... I just thought that was funny. I was like, oh, he did get a triple-double. He just had 10 turnovers in the game. But hey, 25 points, 21 rebounds in his first game without Jimmy Butler. So, hey, I guess he's probably feeling not having Jimmy on the team anymore.
He must be.
I think he was the person most relieved by that Jimmy Butler trade was Karl Anthony Towns, because he got so much shit from Jimmy Butler and about Jimmy Butler and everything surrounding him, calling Karl Anthony Towns soft, weak, that he was, you know, all this stuff. He's probably the person most relieved by this trade.
Oh, yeah.
And then finally, a dismal performance that has probably led to Melo being kicked off the Rockets, which is not reported yet, but signs are looking like they will release him soon. Melo on the 8th, last Thursday, shot 1 of 11 from the field, was 0 for 6 from 3, and had 2 points. And has since not played with the team, like has been quote-unquote sick. In fact, yesterday, the Rockets played... I don't remember who they played, but before the game, D'Antoni was talking to the press, and he coughed. They have said that Melo's been out with an illness, right, which is just... it doesn't mean anything. It just means that he hasn't been playing. So D'Antoni coughs, and a reporter asks, and they're like, oh, do you have the same illness that Melo has?
Oh my God.
And D'Antoni said no. He said, also, that wasn't that funny. I was like, come on, that's freaking hilarious, dude.
That is hilarious.
I thought that was awesome. But yes, so Melo probably leaving the Rockets. We don't know for sure. It looks like a lot of the players, his teammates, have basically accepted that he's not coming back and that this 10-game experiment with Melo on the Rockets is going to be over, which when we get news of that, we will definitely post on the Instagram about it, and we'll talk about it next week's episode. But, yeah, an interesting saga there with Melo, and then obviously the two-point dismal performance. I just had to point that out. I don't want to be a Melo hater, but I'm not a Melo fan, so I just thought that was fun to do.
Oh my gosh. Well, hey, guys, that's the news. That's all the news we got. Let's take a quick break here. When we come back, we have a little Week 10 recap in the NFL. We're going to cover, highlight a few games for you, talk about the last week in the NFL. We also have our quick picks of the week. So stick around, and we'll be right back.
Thank you guys for listening to the Sports Hour today. Be sure, if you haven't already, to follow our socials. You can find us on Twitter at Sports Hour Guys, Instagram at The Sports Hour Guys, and you can like our Facebook page. Be sure to follow those socials. Interact with us. We want to hear from you. Now back to the show. Oh. I wonder if the microphone picked that up, Mitch. That was so deep and mellow.
Welcome back to the Sports Hour, Mitch Mo and Daddy D.
I love it. I'm telling you guys, all you need to do is just let me know if it's a terrible nickname. Okay, that's I just need help. So I'm
Daddy D's not that bad.
I don't think it's that bad. I gotta try some stuff out, guys. So let us know on the Instagram, the Twitter, text me, whatever. Let me know, Dallin, that's a disgusting nickname, or maybe like, hey, I kinda like it. I don't know. We'll find out. I just need help.
Yeah. We need help. We need help bad, guys.
We do. All right, let's get into some of these Week 10 games. Like we said, a weird week. Not many close games, but there were a few we wanted to mention. There's one game that only Mitch wants to mention, so I guess we'll talk about it.
There's more than one, but this one is the first one I brought up. And when I told you that I wanted to bring it up, you're like, do we have to?
Yes.
And yes, we do. We probably should. Panthers-Steelers. Absolute blowout. Steelers winning 52-21. Not a good game by the Carolina Panthers offensively. Cam Newton threw the ball just fine, 23 for 29, but 193, 2-1 was the stat line for him. McCaffrey again leading the team in touches with 14 for 77 and a touchdown.
He also had three touchdowns total.
Yeah, and he led him in receptions too with 5 for 61 and 2 through the air. Red flag for your Panthers or a fluke game,
nope,
do you think, for the Steelers?
Nope, it's a fluke game. Steelers scoring 52 is insane. They also scored 31 by halftime. It's not a good look. Obviously, it's not something you're happy about, but I think it's more of just a fluke game. You got blown out. The defense just looked absolutely atrocious, and they're obviously had to figure that out, but I think they'll be okay. It is what it is. You know, it's just one game in the end.
I know we had talked about the Steelers not being as good as people thought they're going to be. They're 6-2-1.
Yeah, I was wrong,
and we were both wrong.
I think we have to own that now.
I'll own that. They're still a good team. But they're not. But they're not 31 points better than the Panthers.
No, of course not. It's a great performance by the Steelers. Obviously, you can't discredit them for anything. But, you know, it happened real quick. You know, the Panthers went down first drive, scored a touchdown. Pittsburgh came back, scored. Next drive, Cam Newton throws a pick six. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, you know, 14-7. And that one, the touchdown that the Pittsburgh had beforehand was the one pass to Antonio or Juju down the sideline. One pass, one play, one score. And it was like all of a sudden that, and then a pick six. And it's like, oh, shoot, now they're down 14-7. Like, that was crazy. And after that, the game was over. I mean, it was that quick.
And Big Ben played very, very well.
Absolutely.
22 for 25, 328, and 5 touchdowns. That's an outstanding game from Big Ben, who's been playing very well this year. He has been. Going to be one of the better games that he has all year. So, I'm not worried about the Panthers. Obviously, that was a defensive, for the lack of a better term, boner. They did not play well at all. And we knew offensively this is about where they're going to be as far as points that they put up a game. 21 is about where they're going to be anyway. So,
well, I think they could have scored more, but once they were down that deficit, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, they put the backup in, the Steelers put their backup in, and then that was like,
Well, even Josh, Josh Dobbs was 1 for 2 for negative 3 yards. So I think it was Big Ben just torching guys that night.
No, no, that's what I'm saying. All I'm saying for the Panthers is that they could have scored more than 21 points, but after a while, the game was over, so they just put the backups in, ran the ball, and ended the game. So, yeah, I mean, it is what it is. It was embarrassing. You know, I made Caitlin go to Buffalo Wild Wings with me to watch the game in my Cam Newton jersey, and walking out of there at halftime was not my favorite thing to do. As I'm like, yep, my team's getting smoked.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go watch it at home now.
Like, well, and yeah. I mean, and something we didn't mention, CJ Anderson, after go 2 for -1, was promptly released by the Carolina Panthers. So he is without a job right now. So
yeah, and I think a team like the Eagles should definitely pick him up. He just wasn't used. And, you know, McCaffrey has the highest usage rate of any running back in the league at like 94%. He's played 94% of snaps the entire season. And he's really become that guy. And I think the Panthers weren't sure if he was going to be that guy his second season, or they still had to balance him with the power run guy like they did with Jonathan Stewart last year. So they signed CJ Anderson and then just didn't use him. They didn't need him because McCaffrey's just controlled the ball and played well. So, you know, I think it's nice of them to release him, gives him a chance to go play for a team, get some snaps. He's still a good player, and he's not that old. So I think a team like the Eagles or the Patriots could definitely use his talents, and he'll be able to be productive somewhere else.
I think he's going to be better fit in New England than Philadelphia, just because Josh Adams is shown to be a very good running back in Philadelphia. He's been one of the most efficient backs in that rotation, and they platoon in that, and I think they
need a consistent guy. They're missing Ajayi a lot.
But even Ajayi wasn't all that consistent.
Yeah, but he was a guy you could rely on more so than any of the other guys they have. I think C.J. Anderson could do that
for him. Yeah, and Corey Clement hasn't played well, and neither has Wendell Smallwood. So, yeah, maybe. I mean, Philly's a good fit. I think New England's a more likely destination.
I think either of those teams could use him for sure. But, you know.
Sure.
I think he'll get a job, and I think he'll get touches more than he would in Carolina. And so, you know, it makes sense. It's like, you know, didn't work out, all good. You know, no love lost there, so.
Yeah.
All right, let's stop talking about my Panthers' terrible Thursday night performance. What other game do you want to talk about?
I'd like to mention, really quick, Redskins-Buccaneers.
Oh, yeah, okay.
The Skins going to 6-3. It's looking more likely like you're going to get a tattoo on your left butt cheek.
I still have hope. I'm a Cowboys fan now. Apparently.
I know. I bet you are.
I'm rooting for anybody to win that division.
Yeah, right? But here's the most notable stat I want to mention is Ryan Fitzpatrick. The Buccaneers only put up 3 points the entire game. They kicked a field goal in the second quarter, and that was it. Ryan Fitzpatrick still threw for over 400 yards. The big killer stat there is he had 3 turnovers. He had 2 interceptions and then lost a fumble as well. Peyton Barber, the 13 for 61, and their leading receiver was Chris Godwin, who helped up my fantasy team quite a bit, with a 7 for 103. That's one of the weirdest stat lines I've ever seen, where there's so much offensive production, but yet no points on the board.
Tampa Bay had 501 total yards in the game and scored 3 points. They also outgained by a lot the Redskins. The Redskins only had 286 total yards. So they had 200 more yards than the Redskins. The defense shows up and holds the Redskins to 16 points, but 4 turnovers and an abysmal performance in the red zone. I mean, they got to the red zone and they could not do anything, led to a loss. It is very strange, but this is a bad team, and this is what bad teams do. They do weird things like this.
Yeah, and I mean, and obviously the special teams, once again, the bugaboo for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Chandler Catanzaro, 1 for 3.
And released promptly.
Yeah. So they punted one time the entire game. They punted one time and still only put 3 points.
It was the red zone performance. They could not do anything once they got on, let alone the Redskins side of the field. But once they got into the red zone, turning overs, it was crazy. It was a weird game. But just a bad team. Let's talk about a few other bad teams. The Bills played the Jets, which is the runner-up to last week's garbage game of the week. Probably should have been the garbage game of the week. It was 41-10. Bills. And it was not Nathan Peterman throwing the football. It was Matt Barkley who came in to start for the Bills. He's their fourth starting quarterback this season. He was 15 for 25, 232 yards, two touchdowns. LeSean McCoy finally got things going. Had 113 yards on the ground and two touchdowns, and they completely blew out the Jets. It was weird.
Yeah, Shady looked like Shady, right. which was good to see, especially a guy who's over the 30 hill. I think he's going to play well into his 30s. Not well into his 30s, but well past his age 30 season. And he kind of returned to form last week. And Matt Barkley played pretty good. I mean, he played pretty good. I'm not saying he's the fix and the answer to that. I think Josh Allen ultimately will be. But a good performance from someone that they may be able to lean on in a pinch. Of course, they don't have Nathan Peterman to lean on anymore. but the Jets did start Josh McCown this week.
It was terrible.
And he did not play well. 17 for 34, 135, and two interceptions. Their leading rusher was Elijah McGuire, who was a one-hit wonder last year, and this week was their leading rusher, 6 for 30 on the ground. Not a whole lot of action on the ground. It was just a pitiful performance by the New York Jets, one of many more to come throughout the rest of the year. The New York Jets are a pitiful team. As are the Buffalo Bills, but they made the Buffalo Bills look like playoff contenders this week.
Yeah.
I mean, and you have to be feeling so shitty about yourself come Monday morning when your team makes the Buffalo Bills look like a playoff contender.
Right, and Matt Barkley as the starting quarterback.
Like, I mean, have to feel absolutely terrible about yourself. Is it Todd Bowles that's still on the head at the helm of the New York Jets?
Yeah, and I did see a report this week that they will not fire him during this season. They said that he is going to be the head coach towards the end of the season, but he's gone the minute the season's over.
Oh, absolutely. Todd Bowles has not done what he was supposed to do over there in New York. Honestly, you know who I want to see back in New York? I want to see Rex Ryan back on the sideline there. At least he... Now, I know, and you made a gross face there, but
I just stank face.
That was like that was a stank face. But here's my point: is at least he provided a spark on the sideline. At least he's a good motivator.
That's a good way of putting it.
And you know what? And I honestly think that would do maybe a little bit of good. There's not a whole lot of spark on the sideline. It's very, very dull, and almost depressing on the New York Jets sideline right now. That this team is at, like, I'll say the word again, pitiful.
Pitiful.
They are absolutely pitiful, and they need a spark somewhere, and it's definitely not going to come at the hands of Todd Bowles.
No
way in hell.
No, but I do respect the decision to keep him. We talked about this a few weeks ago that, you know, I don't understand when coaches are fired mid-season unless it's an absolutely necessary thing to do, or you have the replacement in the ranks and they want them to be the interim in the meantime. So I'm glad the Jets are letting Bowles play out the season. It's not going to get any better. They're not going to make a playoff. So why not let him finish out the season, win six games, and then you fire him and then get the new head coach? You know, it makes sense. And then they can pair somebody up with their young star quarterback, Sam Darnold, and really start building a team around him and a new head coach. And yeah, I think it's good. But yeah, not a good look to lose to the Bills by 31 at home. So...
No, not at all.
Not a good look. Let's talk about a game that you gave me crap for last week. You gave me a lot of crap for picking the Titans to beat the Patriots at home, and sure enough, the Titans destroyed the Patriots 34-10.
In fact, I ranted.
You did. And, you went Stephen A. on me. You went Stephen A. on me.
I went full Stephen A. Smith on you, and you were right, Dallin. You were right. But Tom Brady... Here's the statistic I want to point out is he has one touchdown pass in the last 3 weeks.
Whoa.
He has not looked
good.
That
is not a good stat.
and he was not good this last week. 21 for 41, 254, and goose eggs across the board there. They get to the point where they basically were saying this game's over, and they brought in Brian Hoyer. which I have not seen Tom Brady get benched for in when they're in a losing situation, I don't think ever. And so it's interesting. It's really, are we at the cliff? Are we coming to
no,
the cliff?
Closer, no.
Closer, no, maybe? I mean, this is three weeks now, and he has one touchdown pass. He has not played well in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, I don't think we're there. Listen, this Tennessee team is young, but this defense is good. The defense is good, okay? And sure. I think this is just a case of a young defense playing well at home, you know? And you look at, I mean, Brady didn't have a great game, sure, but they ran the ball 19 times for 40 yards. And I don't care what quarterback you are, it's going to be really hard to win a game when you're getting under, you're barely getting 2 yards a carry. That
they contained Sony Michel
11
very, very
attempts
well.
For 31 yards. That's what Sony Michel had. And yes. That was it. And so, yeah, I mean, the Tennessee defense played to their strengths. They stopped the run. They forced Brady to beat them, and they have a good secondary too. They have a lot of good young pieces there, and were able to get the win. And the offense rolled pretty well. Derrick Henry, 2 touchdowns. Marcus Mariota, no turnovers, which is what you need from him. You know, 2 touchdowns, 228 yards. Corey Davis had himself a big game. The young first round wide receiver pick from a few years ago, 7 catches, 125 yards and a touchdown. And yeah, I just think this is a case of a young defense playing well and a one-sided Patriots team, which is what they have been for the last few years. They have no run game. And they have to rely on Brady. And as he gets older, it's going to be more and more evident. When you can stop the run and force Brady to beat you, it's becoming more and more possible to beat the Patriots with that formula. Now that he is older. Now that he is older, sure. And he's not as good as he was.
Well, I mean, and let's look at the guys that received targets or had receptions last week. Julian Edelman, of course. But then after that, Josh Gordon, James White, Philip Dorsett, Jacob Hollister, Dwayne Ooh. Allen, yeah, exactly, and Chris Hogan, and then Tom Brady received a target himself, Julian Edelman threw him.
But why do they keep trying that stupid Philly special play with Tom Brady?
He tripped over his own feet.
Tom Brady.
This dude is the least coordinated, the most unathletic quarterback
I saw this stat this week. I think he ran the fourth slowest 40-yard dash in NFL Combine history. Why are they throwing him the ball on the outside? They tried it before and it was terrible, and now they tried it again. I don't know.
It's like they run it against the scout team and they think it's going to go
well against
a good defense.
Or maybe they're like, we shouldn't do this. It is so unexpected that we're just going to try it, and maybe he just gets to walk into the end zone. I don't get it, Mitch.
That has to be like, the reason.
It's just insane. Yeah, you think you try it twice, it hasn't worked either time, just give up. They've cut that one out of the playbook.
But here's my point, is that, like, Julian Edelman was by far their leading receiver. He was 9 for 104. That's really the only guy he has a really solid rapport with. A guy that he consistently throws to week in and week out. And when you only have one guy that you can do that with, that's troubling even for what the Patriots are really good at, is throwing the football. That's even troubling for that when you only have one guy you really feel comfortable throwing the ball to. Now, Josh Gordon was averaging 20 yards of reception. He was 4 for 81. But they're still building that relationship.
Right.
They're still building that rapport. And so for him really to only have Julian Edelman, who is going to be a guy that's going to come across the middle a lot. He's a tough, gritty receiver. He's not going to be able to stretch the ball for you. He's an over-the-middle type guy. That's concerning. For this Patriots offense, and they might win 11 or 12 games, but that's not going to get them very far in the playoffs.
And I think you look at the competition they're going to have with the Chargers, the Chiefs, the Steelers. Right now, I think all three of those teams are better than the Patriots. They're more balanced. They have more talent. I trust them more come playoffs, and the Patriots are going to have to figure something out. They got to shore up this run game because, like I said, when you can stop that run game, I mean, he doesn't have Gronk anymore. The only reliable target he has is Edelman and maybe Chris Hogan, and that's not enough. That's not enough to compete with the teams in the AFC.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm the opposing team, I'm not scared of the Patriots.
No, I agree.
I mean, and I'm not high on the Chargers right now. I've said that over the last maybe couple months. Because I still don't believe they've had a really good win yet. But I'm more fearful of playing the Chargers in a playoff situation than I am the Patriots right now.
Yeah,
because of how limited they are. They just happen to be. They happen to have a mastermind at the helm in Bill Belichick. That's what they're. Right. That's where they're.
That's and Tom Brady, right, who has still been able to do this year after year after year, and until we don't see it happen, you're gonna believe it can. You know what
but
I mean?
But I don't think Tom Brady's there anymore right now. He's not there right now because he's just
regular season. But like, come playoff time, you're gonna expect that Brady's gonna be Brady.
But that's easy to carry over regular season. That's easy to carry over. He's gone three consecutive weeks, and he's only has one touchdown pass.
I get what you're saying.
That's not one touchdown pass in each week. That is one over the course of three weeks.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. All I'm saying is until Tom Brady proves that he can't win in the postseason like he has his entire career, then we're not going to believe it. So it has
I don't
to happen.
Think he has
maybe
the
this
team
year,
to do it anymore,
maybe this year so. Is the year. And I'm not very high on them, but until we see it, I'm going to count on him being able to do something in the postseason. So, which we will find out. Let's talk about the last game. I just want to mention the Monday night game, which was the garbage game of the week, and actually turned out to be a pretty decent game. I mean, we had last minute drives. We had Eli driving down the field in the ugliest game winning drive I've ever seen. I mean, it was basically propelled by like penalties. It was like not actually a good game-winning drive, and yet somehow the Giants ended up winning the game and got lucky by a bunch of stupid penalties. And yeah, and then Nick Mullins trying to bring it back the other way. It was actually an entertaining matchup.
Yes, absolutely. Nick Mullins, I know he threw more interceptions than he threw touchdown passes, but he still looks really pretty. He still looks pretty good. I mean, granted, his first two games, he played the Oakland Raiders and the New York Giants.
Yeah,
two pretty easy matchups. But that's not a good. That's not a bad way to ease someone into it.
Absolutely not.
I mean, 27 for 39, 250, one touchdown, two picks. The Giants secondary still isn't terrible, but it's definitely not the best that you could possibly face. Matt Breida. Who's been struggling with injuries lately. He was 17 for 101, 5.9 and a carry and a touchdown. Looked pretty good. So here's my take of the week. I am going, and if I were going to power rank, I'm going to say George Kittle is a more valuable tight end than Rob Gronkowski. And I'm going to say that George Kittle is more talented than Rob Gronkowski right now.
Well, Rob Gronkowski's not playing.
But
so
no, but I mean,
that's an easy one.
No, but I mean, talent wise, I mean, you if you have a healthy Rob Gronkowski right now, even if he's not hurt due to his past injury history, and then you have George Kittle right now, I would take George Kittle over Rob Gronkowski.
Really? Oh.
Yeah, I'd take George Kittle over Rob Gronkowski.
Wow.
This guy's good. This guy is very, very good.
Yeah, but he's not. I mean, Gronkowski is like dominant. Gronkowski has the size and the physical ability to do anything that no other tight end in the league can do.
If Gronkowski still had his prior injury history but wasn't hurt right now, you'd take Gronkowski over Kittle.
Oh yeah. Oh, 100%. I'd take Gronkowski over any tight end in the NFL. I mean, I think Kittle's great, but I think a lot of what makes Kittle great is because the Niners don't have a lot of other weapons. So he's the reliable target who's getting targets, and they're much deserved, and he's doing a lot with it, but he's still just getting targets because that team doesn't have a lot of weapons. So it's either him, you're throwing the ball to him, or Goodwin, and that's about it. So he's going to get, you know, he's going to get catches. It's like, it's very much like Greg Olsen in Carolina. For a lot of years, the wide receiver core was so bad that the only person Cam had to throw to was Greg Olsen. So Greg Olsen was the leading receiver and got 1,000 yards a year, three straight years. And it's not that Greg Olsen's not a good tight end. It's just that in the team, with the team that they had, he was the only viable option a lot of the time. And I think the Niners are experiencing something similar this year with George Kittle. I think it's great for him, and it makes him look really good, and I think he's a solid tight end, but I don't know. Not better than Gronk. Ride the Kittle train, Mitch. Ride it.
I'm riding it. Yeah, I think George Kittle is the real deal. I think he's the real deal, and right now I'd take him over Gronk. Absolutely.
All right, let us know, guys, what you think of that.
Power rank him over Gronk.
Wow.
As far as best tight ends. Would you,
then who's is there anyone better than Kittle?
Well, Travis Kelce and Zach Ertz.
So it's those three then.
Yeah, because I don't think okay. I mean I can't think of anyone that would really compete with Zach Ertz or Travis Kelce other than George Kittle.
Okay. All right.
I mean, yeah. There's nothing that come to mind.
Yeah, I feel you. I feel you.
So
no Trey Boo Boo. Okay. Just kidding.
Well,
I'm just kidding.
Trey Boo Boo's Zach Ertz esque, but he's not Zach Ertz talent.
Right, right.
So let's
I know. You're just really high on your boy. So I just wanted to point that out.
I like George Kittle. I really like him. I really think he's a great. Yeah. Moving on.
You're good.
We could spend a lot of time on that. We're not going to talk about that. Guys, that's the games we want to cover. We're going to get into me and Dallin's favorite segment of the week. It's I like it more than Mitch Mo's top 5 list of the week. I like it more than Daddy D's top 3 favorites. It's the quick picks, guys. Dallin, why don't you update him on what happened this last week on our picks?
Yeah, last week we were really different on a lot of our picks. It turned out in my favor. I was 10-4, Mitch 8-6. That puts my lead back up to 3 as it was a few weeks ago. So I am 90-55-2, Mitch 87-58-2. And we're in, week 11, so we've got 7 weeks left.
Yeah.
We're
getting there.
But it's still close, and you know, it can swing real quick, as we found out. So we'll look for Mitch to try to close this gap a little bit this week.
That's right. Well, let's start with the first game of the week. We have the Green Bay Packers. They're leaving the city of Green Bay to head up to the Emerald City in the PNW to take on the Seattle Seahawks. I have the Seahawks at home. I think this is a team that has really turned a corner. I think they are outperforming what my initial thoughts about them were going to be. Of course, now they have a losing record at home. I just want to point this out. This was something that was very interesting to me. They're
really?
They're 1-2 at home right now. But this is a team that traditionally has played very well at home. The Packers have not traveled well this year. They are 0-4 on the road. 0-4 on the road. So I'm going to take the Seahawks at home.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to take the Seahawks as well. Like you said, they have looked a lot better, you know, over the last few weeks. Staying competitive and a lot better than I thought they were going to be, for sure. I know both of our projections were not very high on the Seahawks, but hey, they're playing decent. This is a big win. I mean, this is a big game this week, but for both the Packers and the Seahawks. Packers sitting at 4-4-1, Seahawks at 4-5. Both of them, if they want to stay in playoff contention, need to win this game. So I think this is going to be I think it's going to be a competitive, close game, but I have the Seahawks. You did mention that they have a losing record at home. They beat the Cowboys at home and then lost to the Rams and the Chargers at home, which I think is about fitting. I mean, those are two really good teams they lost to at home.
Yeah.
So they've had a tough home schedule, but they play the Packers, the Niners, the Vikings, the Chiefs, and the Cardinals still at home. Obviously, Niners and Cardinals, fairly easy games. Chiefs, Vikings, not as easy to win at home. So,
no, sir.
We've got a rough little schedule coming up. So, yeah, that's the Thursday night game. Going into Sunday morning, we have an AFC North matchup. Cincinnati traveling to Baltimore. These are two teams that were both 3-1, have fell off. You know, especially Baltimore, quite a bit over the last few weeks. Both need a win here. I'm going to take Baltimore at home in this.
Yeah, I really think that losing AJ Green is going to be really detrimental to that Bengals offense. They still have Joe Mixon, who's still kind of coming back from his little injuries that he's been dealing with. I think the Ravens defense, which is still the best in the AFC, in my opinion, right up there with the Titans. I think that they hang around and they hold off Cincinnati and get the win at home.
Yeah, you know, the Ravens lost 3 straight games, but they play the Saints, the Panthers, and the Steelers. And that's a really tough Three-game stretch.
That's a tough stretch.
And then they got their bye. So now they're coming off the bye. They play the Bengals, Raiders, Falcons before they play the Chiefs. So, I mean, we're talking about three games they could win, and just like that, they could be 7-5. I still think this team is a good team, just had a really rough point in the schedule.
Sure, absolutely. So after that, we have Carolina. They are leaving the East Coast, and they're headed up to Motor City to take on the Detroit Lions. Detroit, I am very convinced, is just not a good team. They have looked very, very bad over the last few weeks. I think they had a decent start, but I think they're really starting to show their true colors. Matt Stafford will keep them around enough to maybe make it a semi-close game, but I have Carolina on the road bouncing back from the defeat against the Steelers.
Yeah, Panthers in this one easy. Detroit has lost three straight. After starting off the season, they're 3-3 at that point. So they're 3-3, looking pretty decent. I've lost three straight. It's going to be four straight. This is a game they're not going to win.
Yeah,
they're not going to win it. Nothing else to say about that. AFC South matchup: Tennessee traveling to Indianapolis to take on the Colts. The Colts beat the Jacksonville Jaguars last week. Have made that comeback. I mentioned them as a fringe playoff team, and Mitch freaked out on me. Now, in the standings, they are 4-5, only two games back of the Texans. Take on the Titans, who are 5-4, a game ahead of them in the standings, and I am taking the Colts at home.
Oh, wow.
Tennessee with the big win against the Patriots, but I like this Colts team. They're trending in the right direction. This is going to be a very interesting game, but the Colts are going to win this one at home.
This was a tough game for me to pick. It really was, because you were correct about the Colts. I will tell you that you were correct about the Colts. They are in the top half of scoring in the AFC right now. But you were also correct about the Titans. And I am hopping on the Titans train, and I think that defense is very, very good. I'm going to take Tennessee on the road in a close, low-scoring game. I think that defense is going to carry them throughout the rest of the year into a potential second wild card spot. I think that the Titans defense is actually for real. Mike Vrabel's doing a good job with it. So I got Tennessee on the road in Indianapolis.
Yeah, I think this game can swing either way. But this was hard for me because they're both two teams that I'm very high on, and I was like, oh, which way do I go? So I would not be surprised if Tennessee wins this game. They're a good team.
Yeah, absolutely. Following that game, we have Dallas. They're leaving the Lone Star State to head down to Hotlanta to take on the Atlanta Falcons. I have Atlanta in this game at home. I think playing in a dome, it doesn't really make a difference for them, but that offense is still explosive. They've got Julio rolling now, and so I think that that's going to be a little bit overwhelming for a Cowboys defense that has looked pretty decent. So I got Atlanta. And hopefully a close game. I think that's what it's going to be against Dallas.
Yeah, you know, I took Dallas in this game. Atlanta has looked really good at times, and then at other times, not so good. They lost last week against the Browns, who I picked the Browns to beat them last week. Are a good team, but a young team. And Dallas has kind of been the same. I mean, they had a big win on Sunday night against the Eagles, but lost the last week, the week before that, to the Titans, and have been really inconsistent. But I'm going to take Dallas in this one. A lot of this stems on the fact that I am rooting for any NFC East team to beat out the Redskins and win the division. So Philly, Dallas, I don't care who it is. Just somebody needs to beat Washington. So, I'll take Dallas.
All right.
Okay, so we have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Ryan Fitzpatrick, Fitzmagic, traveling up to the Meadowlands to take on the Giants. I have the Giants in this game. They're winning two straight games, two straight weeks. They're going to get a win here at home against a Tampa Bay team that is equally as bad.
Well, I got the Giants. I got the Giants as well. The Giants are actually 0-4 at home this year. And so they have to get a win at home at some point, right?
Yeah.
And so I think if they're going to do it against a team that has a tough time putting the ball in the end zone or through the uprights, it's going to be this week. I got the Giants at home. And I honestly think fairly handily.
Well, okay. We're going to see a Bills-Jets kind of game is what you're thinking.
I think Yeah, and I think this is going to be a huge morale booster for the New York Giants. As far as maybe handling a team, I think is going to do huge things for them moving forward.
Yeah, for sure.
I think they need that type of game, and I think they're going to get it this week against the Bucks. Following that, we have the Houston Texans. They are traveling to the nation's capital to take on the Washington Redskins. Dallin, you and I talked about this game before the recording. I was kind of stuck on who I was picking. I'm taking the road team. I want you to get a tattoo on your butt cheek, but I feel pretty comfortable with the Redskins' lead right now. So I'm going to go Houston on the road in Washington. Houston has played a lot better over the last few weeks. It's 6 consecutive wins, I believe, for them right now. So they're looking a lot better, and I'm going to take Houston on the road.
Yeah, well, I'm going to take Houston as well. Like you said, 6 straight wins against some pretty good teams. And, you know, a tough matchup on the road against a Redskins team that's also 6-3. But yeah, I think Houston's the better team in this. The Redskins, I will say this, they're 6-3, they're playing well. But it's kind of a weird 6-3. I mean, Alex Smith hasn't played great. Adrian Peterson's playing way better than they should. And the young defense is outperforming themselves. I think regression is due for this team. And it's going to start at some point, I think, this week against a really good Houston Texans team. Might be the beginning of it. Looking forward to their schedule, they have Texans, Cowboys, Eagles the next 3 weeks. Those are going to be some key games. You know, so we'll see how they handle these next 3 competitive matchups.
Yeah, Washington's point differential throughout the entire season is 1 point.
Yep, there you go.
And they're 6-3.
Not a good sign.
So they definitely have scraped by so far. But I think in that division that you can get away with doing that.
Yeah, true. Very true. All right, we have a rematch of an AFC divisional round matchup last year. Pittsburgh versus Jacksonville in the swamps of Jacksonville.
Yeah, baby!
I wanted to take Jaguars in this game, but I could not make myself do it as hard as I wanted to. I took the Steelers on the road.
I have a hard time believing that Jacksonville, with Fournette back, will slip to 3-7. And I think that Pittsburgh has to lose some more games somewhere. And so I'm going to take Jacksonville at home. Pittsburgh's not going to only lose 2 games throughout the entire year. And Jacksonville is not going to win only 3. So they have to get him somewhere. I think that Jacksonville is going to get the win at home against Pittsburgh.
All right.
Following that, we have Denver. They're traveling to the City of Angels to the absolutely immaculate 28,000 fan stadium.
The ruckus crowd of the Chargers faithful.
That's right. All 7 fans will be in attendance. I have the Chargers at home against Denver. I think that the Chargers, you were correct about them. They're 7-2 now. They're a fairly good team. And I got the Chargers at home against Denver, who's not a very good team.
No, Denver's not good. They're 3-6. The Chargers have also won 6 straight games. Just as the Houston Texans have. And they've beat some good teams on the way. This is a bad team, so I think much like the Raiders game last week, this is going to be a pretty easy one for the Chargers to win.
Yeah.
All right, we have the garbage game of the week. Cue the music!
This is just hot garbage. Straight hot garbage. You're a garbage person.
We have, anytime Oakland plays, it's a garbage game of the week. Oakland traveling to Glendale, Arizona, to take on the Arizona Cardinals. What a dumb game. I got Arizona in this. David Johnson, ever since Byron Leftwich took over play calling and the offensive coordinator role, the offense has looked a lot better for Arizona. I thought they looked pretty good. They looked pretty decent last week against a really good Chiefs team. David Johnson getting more of a role in the offense. I think that'll continue this week, and they're gonna win this game against Oakland.
The second lowest scoring team in the AFC against one of the worst defenses in the NFC. I'm going to take Oakland on the road. Oakland is winless on the road this year. They can't go 0-8. They could, but I don't think they will. They can't go 1-15. So I don't think even a John Gruden-led team is capable of going 1-15.
I believe it.
I I am going to say that they get the win on the road against Arizona in a tight game, but I think David Johnson does have a good game. I think you're correct about that. I think he has a big game, but I think Oakland barely ekes this one out. Following that, we have the Eagles. They are leaving the city of brotherly love, contrary to what the fans of the Eagles would make you believe. They are leaving Philadelphia to go down to Nollins to play on. To play on? What the hell am I saying? To play and take on the New Orleans Saints. I have the Saints at home. This is one of the great prolific offenses that we've ever seen. Not just this year, but that we've ever seen. They have the great quarterback, Drew Brees, leading that team. And I think that they tear Philly up this week.
I am I'm going to take Philly in this game. Wow. I am not selling on the Eagles yet. I am not selling on the Eagles yet. I think there's still a chance for them. They are 4-5. If you look at their five losses, they have haven't lost a game this season by more than a touchdown. The biggest loss was last week against the Cowboys by 7, but every loss has been a one-score loss, and the wins have been close, too. I mean, they blew out the Giants, but other than that, the wins have been close, too. But this is a team that has been competitive, but they just haven't quite pushed to that level. But they have the talent and the experience and the capability to do that. I think they're going to make a statement this week, go down to New Orleans, get the win against the Saints, and prove to people that, hey, we're not out of this. Don't count us out. I mean, these are the Super Bowl champs from last year. They have that experience. They have that swagger with them. After the Saints game, they get to play the Giants, the Redskins, and the Cowboys. Those are three winnable games. If they can win these four games, get to 8-5, I'm feeling really good about this. So, yeah, I'm going to take Philly in this game.
All right. I don't hate it. I don't hate it. So I'm not going to go full Stephen A on you because I don't hate that. But
yeah, I just, like I said, I can't punt on them yet. This is the week. If they are not competitive this week, then I think we just got to call it a wrap on their season. Because to get to 4-6, even if they, you know, win out, they still got to play the Rams. They still play the Texans on top of the divisional matchups. It's going to be a rough schedule going out, but they need a win this week.
Based on those last two games, the Rams and the Texans that you named, 9-7 looks very plausible.
Yeah, yeah.
What you've been saying. So, right. It looks very plausible that the Redskins could win that division. Anyway, we're going to move on.
Yeah, okay. Vikings. Sunday night matchup. This is the Sunday night matchup.
Yeah, Sunday night matchup. I will be watching this game for sure because they have the Minnesota Vikings traveling to the Windy City to take on the Bears. And I am so looking forward to this game. I'll have my Mike Ditka jersey on. I will be repping the Bears. And you guys, if you listen to the show, you know that I can't take anyone against my Bears. I am taking the Bears.
Yeah, I take the Bears too. Listen, I think the Vikings are a pretty good team. I think the Vikings or the Bears, one of those is going to be the wild card. Depends on who wins the division. But I think this is a fun matchup, a very intriguing matchup, and great that this is the Sunday night game because it'll be, I think, a very competitive game. But at home, I'm going to take the Bears. The Bears have scored a lot of points over the last 3 weeks, beat some very bad teams, but beating bad teams is a good sign, especially by a lot. So they've been pretty dominant against the Jets, the Bills, the Lions. Now they get a good team at their home stadium. And then they get to go back and play the Lions and the Giants again. So, hey, they could win six straight here if they beat the Vikings.
Yeah. Here's the big thing for me is if the Bears, if Trubisky plays well against a pretty good Minnesota defense, that's a very promising sign going forward for the Bears, I think. It's totally dependent on how well Trubisky plays.
Yeah, because, I mean, look good against bad defenses, great, but you've got to look good against, at least decent, against good defenses, and that's going to be the key, absolutely. And the final game, the Monday night game, which has gone through some drama, was supposed to be played in Mexico City, but that field is so terrible. Mitch and I have seen pictures of it. It is awful. It is literally amateur how bad that field is. Instead of risking player injuries or players sitting out, including Tyreek Hill, who basically said, if we play it on this field, I will not be playing on this field. They've moved it back to LA, so it'll be in the Coliseum on Monday night. I'm going to take the Rams in this game. I am so excited to watch this game, first off. But I think in the end, the Rams are a better team. They're a more balanced team, and the home field advantage helps. I've got Rams in this matchup.
All right. I need you to hold on for a second, Dallin. Hold up. This is one of those games, folks, where you could flip a coin and you're okay with whatever comes out. So I got I actually have a Canadian nickel.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Canadian quarter.
Oh, that's
Canadian quarter.
That's pretty cool, eh?
Yeah, pretty cool, eh? From 1969. And so I'm going to flip this quarter. Heads will be the Chiefs. Tails will be the Rams.
All right.
Are you ready?
Yeah,
here we go.
First ever coin flip on the Sports Hour. I love it.
Here we go. Well, I dropped it. We're going with the Rams on the road, or the Chiefs on the road.
The Chiefs. Oh, okay. So Chiefs.
We're going with the Chiefs on the road.
All right.
And you know what? I think you can make an argument for either team.
Absolutely.
I think you can.
Absolutely.
The Chiefs have played very well on the road, and they've been prolific offensively. So, you know what? It's not that far out of reach to think that the Rams could get a loss at home this year. And if it's going to come to anyone, it's going to be a prolific offense like the Chiefs. So, for that and the coin flip's sake, we are going with the Chiefs on the road.
Yeah, well, you know, we talked about, you know, the potential of the Rams going 16-0 earlier this season, and the two games we highlighted were the road game in New Orleans and this game against Kansas City on Monday night. So they're two most losable games, if you will. Absolutely, there's a shot. This game's going to be super entertaining. Between the Sunday night matchup and then this Monday night game, we're going to have, in the span of 24 hours, some really fun football to watch.
Absolutely.
So we'll look forward to that this week. Guys, that is everything today on the Sports Hour. We had a ton of news to cover. We appreciate you sticking around with us, listening. As always, if you're a new listener, welcome. My name's Daddy. I'm here for you.
Well, his name's Dallin, but we call him Daddy
D. Yeah, yeah. Let me know if this nickname's terrible. I got to think of something, guys. So...
We gotta come up with something.
So help us out here. But thank you guys for listening. As we said earlier in the pod, in our little special break, follow us on our socials. The Instagram is at the Sports Hour Guys. Twitter at Sports Hour Guys. The Facebook Sports Hour of Mitch Moe and the Mormon. You can listen to this podcast anywhere that you want to listen to it. Anywhere you can find a podcast, we are there, and we're just waiting.
That's Apple Podcasts, that's Spotify, that's Stitcher, that's Simplecast, that's wherever you want to listen to your podcast. Get online, comment, get in on the conversation. Tell us we suck. That's the only way we can improve and get better. See ya!